If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapien.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapien Show 139. I'm Chris, and with me today is
Matt.
And today's kind of going to kind of be a smorgasbord of discussion because I didn't really put show notes together. I have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, but it's been busy at work, and I was gone for 2 weeks, and all kinds of other stuff went on. So there's been a lot since I think we had our last podcast, but that's gone on. Like Apple TV Plus started on November 1st, and they put out their first 4 shows. And they did something interesting, because Apple's going to release new shows monthly, but what they did is they gave 3 episodes of each show. I'm assuming that's what they're going to do. And since all their shows are hour-long, and really, they released 6 shows, but 2 of the shows are kid shows.
Okay.
And I have not looked at the kid shows and that programming and stuff, but I did watch all of the first 3 episodes of C, which is the Jason Momoa show about a dystopian future where in the 21st century a virus decimates the Earth's population. Only about 2 million people survive, and all of those people emerge blind. And so this is a couple hundred years later. They're back into, you know, there's the monuments of man that still exist, you know, from the 21st century, but the society has fallen back into pieces of, you know, pre-Bronze Age and Bronze Age and Iron Age. But then also society has had to adapt to the fact that these people are sightless, and religion has changed. And it's a neat concept show. I read a couple critics reviews where they got to see the show before November 1st, and they thought the cinematography for a show about blind people was some of the best cinematography they'd ever seen, but they weren't real keen on the story. And I think part of that is that so far what's been presented is not complete. I mean, it's just part of a show. And, you know, it's going to take a whole season to kind of get that story arc and get that going. That being said, I like the show. I will continue to watch it. I got Apple TV Plus, a year of it for free, which is $4.99 a month, which is not bad. But I got a year of it because I bought a new iPhone, which means that also it's a year of it for my family, because it's all part of the family sharing if you have that going on too. And but I was impressed with the show, and it's definitely a show I'll keep watching. Another one I did watch, I started, was Red Moon. And Red Moon is an alternate reality or alternate history version of, it starts in the 60s with the moon landing, but instead of the United States beating everybody to the moon, it's the Russians beat everybody to the moon. And so it's the United States' reaction to this, and the NASA and the astronaut program. And frankly, it is an excellent show. But I will say this about it. You have to really be into NASA and spaceflight and all of that to really get into it, you know? So far it's been enjoyable. I've only watched the first episode of the 3 that are available. And then the rest of it I have not watched yet. There's only so many hours in the day, and those so many hours, only a couple are aligned for me to watch television and pay attention to it. So, and then here in a week or so, I think because it's the 12th, so it's what, next Monday?
Yeah, roundabouts.
Disney is going to release their streaming service, which is $7.99 a month. But because Disney bought Hulu, if you have Hulu, you can get both Hulu and the Disney service and ESPN Plus, which is also a Disney property, always a bundle for like $9.99 or $12.99 a month. It's whatever you're paying for Hulu right now. You get it all.
Yeah.
You know, that the show that I really want to see on that is The Mandalorian, which is supposed to be after Return of the Jedi, but before the what takes place in, you know, the Rise of Skywalker films, which I have not been completely happy with. Continuity not being one of J.J. Abrams' strong points.
But it's an homage.
Yeah. I'm done with homages to my favorite properties. But it looks good. Has awesome directing, and they've put an awesome cast together, is what you'd expect. But we'll have to wait and see what it's like. And I don't really know much about any of the other new properties coming out from Disney, but it is expected that Disney and Apple's already said that not only are they doing new episodes every month of the new shows that they've introduced, but they will be also periodically adding new shows to fill out their service. Because Apple service is interesting in that it's all new stuff, and they took the risk of putting it all out there, where Disney is taking away all of their properties from Netflix and all the other streaming services that had already licensed them and bringing them into Disney Plus. So Disney's going to have a lot more variety to watch, but the majority of it is going to be stuff that's already been out for a long time.
Now, they do have a couple of things coming, like in the Marvel stuff. They've got WandaVision coming, which should be interesting. But yeah, you're right. That's mostly Disney just claiming all their stuff back.
Yeah. Like, you know, they're going to have all the Disney animated films and Pixar animated films that they've had out on Netflix and Hulu and other platforms that will be exclusive to the Disney Plus service. I did hear that some of the Marvel properties that they had done originally for Netflix are going to be and then got canceled, are going to be restarted back on Disney Plus, but there's not a whole lot of detail on that at the moment.
Because that was a pretty rich universe too.
Yes.
When you throw, you know, four independent shows and then one team show together, I mean, you're telling a pretty rich set of stories.
Yeah.
And I think there's still plenty to go.
I do too. But, you know, and there are some of the Disney properties that are ending too. They'll be available on the streaming service to rewatch, but like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all of that is ending, is because that's considered part of the Marvel, 1.0, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever you want to call that.
Because 1.0 and 2.0 or whatever, Disney has a thing where it shows where they overlap. Like Captain Marvel is part of the 2.0. But Iron Man, Captain America, you know, the original Avengers, Thor, those are the 1.0. And so their stories are going to kind of end, and this 2.0 is going to take over. And then their stories are going to kind of end, and 3.0 will come in with... The funny thing is the farther out they go, the more obscure the Marvel comic book heroes become.
Yeah, that's true. And I think my love for Marvel comes from the movies. And I never really read a whole lot of comics growing up, but a few and far between.
Yeah.
My concern is the further out we get and the more obscure these characters get, the less of quality we'll get.
Yeah, because there's no canon to go behind them.
Right.
I mean, there were some things I thought them... I've been collecting comic books since I was 5 or 6 years old, as a matter of fact. that's what helped me learn to read originally, was my dad would get comic books and we'd sit down and I would read them. And so I've been, Captain America was before my time. The comic book, you know, it was so old, it was probably 20 years old by the time I was born. So although I love Captain America and I did read some of the, I have some of the anthologies and I read them as a kid, that was kind of like old canon because there was Captain America, and my favorite old Marvel comic books was Sergeant Rock and Nick Fury. And, you know, Nick Fury from in the cinematic universe, although I think Samuel L. Jackson did a good job playing him, was more secretive than Samuel L. Jackson played him, but he was also, and it's hard to say, it was one of those where it was recast. Because, again, this comic book was 20 years old by the time I was born. Yeah. So by the time I was reading it, you know, they were 25 years old, and that was a totally different cultural, you know.
Yeah.
And so they recast him. So Samuel L. Jackson kind of changed who Nick Fury was. But when you read the Nick Fury comics, who also started out, because it used to be Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos, which they changed in the cinematic universe to Captain America and the Howling Commandos. And so that was also another one of my favorite comic books, was the Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos. And so, you know, that was changed. The characters survived, but the essence of the characters were not really the same. And I have to say that's kind of true of Captain America, too. I like the way Chris Evans portrayed Captain America and the way they wrote the character from the original, the first movie. And then they started wussing him up from the second movie on until Endgame. And then, you know, he kind of gets his balls back and stuff. And I do like the fact that they acknowledged the fact that he could use and handle and control Mjolnir because he was pure of heart, which was one of the themes from the original Captain America that I thought was cool. But I did grow up reading Thor, which was one of my favorite, and Iron Man. And they definitely made... Thor was much more stoic in the comic books than he didn't joke around and stuff like that in the movies. So they kind of made him more likable in that case. But they made Tony Stark much more unlikable than in the comic books. Tony Stark was...
But you know why that is? When Iron Man came out and he was such a success and they started looking to do Iron Man 2, parents started looking at these comic books a little closer. Oh, he's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
He parties too much. He's not a good role model for kids. And so Disneyed Tony Stark.
Yeah.
But I still think they dealt with those issues fairly well. I mean...
Well, in the comic book, there's that period where he was... Because I hate to tell you guys, but comic books were written for adults, not children. They were marketed towards children. But in the comic books, yeah, there was that period, but there was also the period where Tony Stark was kind of the grumpy old man, and that was probably the longest period, at least during my childhood, of Tony Stark during the 80s, the late 70s, early 80s, where he didn't want to be part of S.H.I.E.L.D. because he and Nick Fury didn't get along and things like that, but he was more the grumpy old man than he was the... the ex-alcoholic with the wild mood swings and things like that. And he wasn't so greedy in the comic books as he was portrayed in the movies. You know, or reckless with the technology he created. That was one of the big things, is the technology he created in the comic books. He was much more, it was much more thoughtful and stuff about it. You know, the whole story of creating Ultron never worked, or it happened in the comics, but it wasn't like this haphazard thing where, hey, what if we do this and this and this and this? Let's see what happens, you know? You know, and also the origin story for, because Vision and the Scarlet Witch were big, that those comics came out in the, I would say around 83, 84. And that was those, you know, the one, that whole thing ties back to Magneto and the Magneto story, because he was the father of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. But the origin story for Vision was totally different. And the origin story for, well, they actually gave an origin story for Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch. And, you know, there was a, and I will admit, I don't think the movies have had a chance to cover this yet in the cinematic universe, because there is talk of a Scarlet Witch movie. But that being said,
I think that's probably less likely now that they're doing WandaVision.
Yeah. You know, there was a backstory for the Scarlet Witch and Vision and things that had gone on and revelations about her powers and all this other stuff. That being said, you know, we talk about some of these obscure characters. Hawkeye was one of my favorite comic books, and the Hawkeye character didn't exist until the 80s. But he wasn't portrayed anything like, well, one, he wasn't an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. He was more like, Hawkeye would be the equivalent of Batman in the Marvel Universe. He was not a superhero, didn't have special powers. He was, and that part is portrayed well in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but he did wear a costume that was, two shades of purple where he would blend into the night and things like that. He was more like the Arrow, the Green Arrow. And that's really where you get the Green Arrow in DC Universe. That character existed first, and then Marvel answered with Hawkeye. But he was not part of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He didn't have a family in the comic books, because I still own these and I occasionally go back and peruse them. He had a secret identity, you know, he worked a Joe job or whatever. but now they're talking about, that's one of the things Disney Plus is because they were saying that because of the accusations Jamie Renner's ex-wife made against him, they were thinking about recasting Jamie Renner for the new Hawkeye television series that's going to be on the new Disney Plus. But they've decided against that. And everything. So Jamie Renner will be continuing to portray Hawkeye. But you know, there are a lot of characters that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe they've taken out of obscurity and made them more popular. Hawkeye being one of them. What is her name? She died in Endgame to save Hawkeye.
Black Widow.
She was a very obscure character in the comic books. Also, not an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. it's interesting how that has happened and gone back and forth. And some of the things I like they've done better, some of the things I dislike, you know, that they've changed.
Well, I think there are two kinds of audiences for these films in these series. Fanboys.
Yeah.
And people who have latched on to it now.
Yeah. Now, that being said, because, you know, there's two universes in the Marvel Universe. There's the X-Men universe, and then there's the what we call the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But the X-Men is actually part of that. They follow the X-Men comics very, 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 very closely. Now, I know Disney did not do all of the X-Men films that are canon now, but the origin stories for the original X-Men, for Wolverine, those are all very close to the comic books. I mean, close enough that if you went back and read the comic book part of it, you'd go, oh, I can see this. You know, they do take liberties here and there. I don't believe, just like the X-Men comic books, were not nearly as popular as the Captain America and Iron Man and Spider-Man, specifically comic books. They kept that much more true to what was originally written than the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, I think it's going to be curious going forward because, I mean, the reason that we got rights to do these movies and use these characters was because Marvel was purchased by Disney. So, you know, they're owned, you know, by the Disney conglomerate. And what will be interesting to see is now that Stan Lee, who was probably one of the largest driving forces still alive from that golden age of Marvel comic books, is no longer with us, whether the comic books start reflecting the movies that they come out with, as opposed to Stan Lee being the driving force behind the creation of new characters and the storylines and all of that. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, Stan Lee by far was not the only driving force in the golden age of Marvel, but I think he's the last one living.
Probably.
You know. Well, he was the last one living, I should say. He will no longer be making cameos in movies. Unless they start to digitally animate him.
Which I think they should do.
And they did it to Carrie Fisher. You know? Use that deep fake technology for something useful.
You know, and to be honest, I would much rather them do that than, recast Stan Lee.
Yeah, I mean? Yeah. Well, I don't think they'd recast him because he always played these little parts.
But you know what I'm saying, though, yeah. Right? I mean, I don't need to see, what's his name? Joe Quesada or whatever the hell his name is. I don't need to see him take over the Stan Lee bit,
yeah,
part.
Yeah, I agree. But it should be interesting both from the cinematic perspective and then the Disney Plus, how they're expanding things out. You know, the other thing is, because Star Trek certainly felt this, and I'm a little concerned about CBS All Access and the plethora of Star Trek that is coming forth, is there is always too much of a good thing. And, you know, the internet changed this a lot, but fandom wrapped around Star Trek and Star Wars and all of that was much stronger when those things were more periodic, or there was only one, in the case of Star Trek, there was only one series going on at a time. And because when we were at the end there and you had Voyager overlap with Deep Space Nine and then Enterprise overlap with Voyager for a season, there was a lot of you were just inundated with Star Trek. Now, if you're a big fan, like Matt and I were, or are, we watched it all. But if you just like good science fiction, and that's where it starts to hurt, because the writers are writing multiple shows sometimes. Certainly the directors are directing all the series together. And so the quality tends to dip a little bit, particularly in the writing perspective. And my fear is that we have CBS All Access, Discovery has been really good, and well received, and now we're getting the Picard series, and they're not going to overlap, but the way it sounds like CBS All Access is they want a Star Trek series on every section of the year. So,
which is smart.
It means that 12 months of the year, there's always Star Trek, keeps them in people's minds. But my fear is because the production of these things happen to overlap somewhat, is that it's going to hurt one or more of the shows, particularly as they get more shows in there, because we know Picard's coming out January 23rd. As soon as Picard's over, well, and prior to that, we've already started the short treks. But then as soon as Picard is over, Discovery's going to come on. And while Discovery's airing, they'll be in post-production for the Empress Georgiou show that they haven't announced the air date. But I would say it's a safe guess that that show, will air right as Discovery ends. You know, there might be a week or two hiatus between them, but they're going to keep it running. And then you also have the Lower Decks cartoon, which we haven't heard a release date on yet. That's going to happen. And I have a feeling that will overlap with one or more of the shows. And there's talk of the Pike, Captain Pike show, because the popularity and of Discovery Season 2 with Anson Adams and Ethan Peck and Rebecca Romijn, you know, portraying the crew of the Enterprise before Kirk was captain. You know, that right there, since those shows run about 2.5 months to 3 months each, you're talking 12 months of Star Trek. You know? Now, I will say this.
Out of all of that, though, that animated show is the one that I'm least looking forward to.
Absolutely. Because it's more of a spoof as opposed to being part of real Star Trek canon.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing is so that the Captain Pike show, we know, is a limited run.
Which I'm okay with. Do I feel like Anson did a fantastic job portraying that character?
Yeah.
And would I like to see more? Yeah, I would. But I also know that the bulk of his story has been told.
Correct. Well, we know the ending of his story.
Sure.
We kind of have the beginning of his story a little bit and the end of his story.
Yeah.
Because where he takes over Discovery second season is kind of the beginning of his story, at least in common Trek lore. Although he's referred to in season one, when Saru goes and he asks the computer, show me the records of all the most decorated captains in Starfleet, and Christopher Pike is on that list.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's certainly they can address some of that in a Pike show, you know, through flashback or whatever. I also don't think Rainn Wilson's Harry Mudd is done.
Yeah.
And I think that would also play into the Captain Pike show.
But you know what, though? I would almost rather see them devote Short Trek time
to Rainn Wilson. Yeah, to the Harry Mudd character.
Because I think doing more with that character, with Enterprise people, is too much.
Well, and the question you would have to ask is, when you go back to TOS, because, you know, the one thing that I have liked about CBS in the series piece, and this should be resolved too between the movies and the TV series. So the reason 2009 Star Trek got rebooted the way it did was because Viacom had split the rights to Star Trek. So movie rights went to Paramount Pictures, and CBS retained the television rights. And so in order to reconcile that, Paramount wanted to do more movies, so they created the Kelvin timeline. And, you know, and unfortunately, they let J.J. Abrams be involved in it. As much as I loved Lost, there hasn't been much that he's done afterwards that I've been impressed with. You know? And, but, you know, all the continuity issues, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy those movies and I watch them, particularly the last one, because it's like the Fast and the Furious of Star Trek, and it's kind of fun to watch. But as far as continuity and holes in the timeline and holes in who goes from being a Academy cadet to the captain of the Federation flagship in a movie, you know, and it's not like years passed in that movie or anything. That just doesn't happen. It wouldn't logically happen. And it's that, you know, when we talk about suspension of disbelief, which is what you have to have in Star Trek, well, of any science fiction, it has to be realistic enough that, and logical enough that what they're asking you to disbelieve, so like warp drive or hyperdrive, that's suspension of disbelief. You don't have to explain to me how all the science works, although Star Trek always did a much better job of creating pseudoscience and using real physics and, you know,
extrapolations
to explain physics. Their stuff, but that whole concept is suspension of disbelief. Oh, they're so far in the future that they've figured out how to do this. But things like, you know, expecting, we would never expect an Annapolis Naval Academy cadet to become the captain of an aircraft carrier in
the span of 2 hours.
Say that span of 2 hours was a month, but we would never expect that to happen over a month. You know, that just wouldn't happen.
there are certain circumstances where that could be believable, but they didn't explore that either.
No, they didn't.
You talk about an extinction level event for your naval forces.
Yeah, that could happen.
Then you could do that through battlefield promotions and whatnot, yeah. But that's not what happened here.
No. And then also the whole chain of command, you know, with that Pike in the Kelvin universe telling Spock, who was the first officer, that Kirk is now the first officer. He wasn't even assigned to that crew, you know. There's just too much of that goes on. So it kind of ruins the story because it's hard to suspend your disbelief to make that realistic. But that being said, the movies are entertaining. Now, on the flip side, CBS, who has all the canon behind it, has done a great job with Discovery and things like that. And they've tried to really, really make sure that, you know, even Enterprise, which only lasted for 3 seasons, is part of that universe. That, you know, the contributions that show made are included in that part of the universe. And done so in such a way that it is believable, so that you can suspend your disbelief that, you know, these other things are going on. And I mean, I the Mirror Universe is a perfect example of that.
Agreed.
You know? And so that's why I think that's done. And to go on, take that to the next step. So when JJ went over, what is the first two of the Star Wars movies called? I don't know. I just call it The Rise of Skywalker. So, you know, the first movie, they basically retold the original trilogy in a single movie, and they killed off a whole bunch of beloved characters. I don't know that was the smartest thing to do, because the Kylo Ren killing his father didn't make a whole lot of sense in that movie. There was, let's just put it this way. It doesn't push the plot forward.
It does set up that I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this. I got the distinct impression that Harrison Ford wanted nothing to do
I agree. He's in his 70s.
Yeah.
I can't imagine him wanting to play Han Solo again for another movie after that. And I mean, same thing with the thing is Harrison Ford, when he was introduced in that first movie, you still believed it was Han Solo.
Yeah.
The attitude and how it was done. I don't get that with the Luke Skywalker character. I just Mark Hamill's playing Luke Skywalker like he's still voicing the Joker on the Batman animated series, in my opinion. you know.
Well, we're supposed to believe that Lucas had, you know, such tragedy.
Yeah, but that's the problem.
That he's turned his back on all of it.
It's not set up.
Well, and this goes back to something that JJ does.
Yeah.
You know, he just says, well, let's just twist this one character and you'll just believe it.
Yeah.
Because it's on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's not how these things work. It works in Lost.
Yeah, but that's because it was a new show. And
they're his characters.
Yeah, they're his characters.
He doesn't respect the characters that he's been entrusted with.
Yeah, well, he doesn't respect the history of the story. Because that's what the, you know, although I don't like the term space opera, Star Wars has always fit into that,
yeah,
that genre of science fiction.
Agreed.
It's been very low on science and a lot on the drama, the story. Whereas most good science fiction is usually a more 50-50 balance and the other thing is that makes it different than most science fiction is a lot of science fiction, and Star Trek really fell into this, typically tends to favor stories that address scientific, the use of science, you know, should you or should you not, because you can, or it addresses social issues or something, you know, it's more of a parable in a way. Whereas Star Wars has been more like the guiding light of that happens to be set in space, or, you know, and, which there's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. And some of the new movies have been excellent. Rogue One, but see, they were bounded on two sides. Rogue One was,
yeah.
To tell that story. And so it had to follow the canon. So the Solo story, I've watched it because it's been on Netflix. I saw it in the theater and I liked it, but I've since watched it 2-3 more times since then. I like it as much as Rogue One. I think it does a good job telling the Han Solo backstory,
yeah,
that we don't get. You know, and it also, they introduced good characters.
Yeah.
You know, Woody Harrelson's character is phenomenal in that show. The villain is phenomenal. You know, you feel like he's a villain. You don't feel like... I don't really feel like Kylo Ren is a villain, particularly when he takes his hat off and it sounds like Mike Tyson is the Dark Lord of the Sith, you know?
He's such a wuss.
And what kills me about that is Adam Driver doesn't typically play wussy characters. And yet...
He is the Luke Skywalker. If Luke Skywalker had been turned in Return of the Jedi,
yeah,
Kylo Ren is what Luke Skywalker would have become, I think. Because Luke has always been kind of a whiny character, too.
Yeah.
Although, he kind of grows into it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, grows out of it, yeah, I should say.
Well, Kylo Ren has not.
Yeah, exactly.
That, I think the best depiction of Kylo Ren, did you ever see on YouTube, the Saturday Night Live skit where Adam Driver is on as the host, and they do he's on like a Star Destroyer, and they do Undercover Boss?
Yes, I do remember that.
That is probably the best depiction of Kylo Ren that I can think of. And it's better than what Disney has done. So just to move on a little bit more about new television things, you know, as Apple TV Plus and Disney Plus being the two that are actually happening right now, release more shows, we'll definitely talk about them and review them a little bit. What is interesting is NBC has their own streaming service coming out called the Peacock. It's not due until next year. And somebody else has a streaming service coming out as well. That's not due out until next year. And I can't remember who it was.
Well, we know it's not ABC because ABC is tied into the Disney thing.
Yeah.
I do remember hearing about another one too.
Yeah. Well, we'll update you next time on that. So we want to hear from you. Please send us some audio, video, you know, text, mail electronically to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.